Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the cold and rainy night of free speech because it's cold and it's raining. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage. Okay, today we are doing our show with Cato. Cato, welcome to the show.
Well, it's good to be here. Better and worse weeks, but here we are today. It is what it is. A couple things I want to say real quick about the environmental disaster in East Palestine. First, I just want to say that if this disaster happened in China somewhere and not in the U.S., oh, you bet your boots the Western mainstream media will be covering it all over and over again nonstop. It will be front page news, and they'll be talking about, oh, China has no regard for environmental, the environment, China's infrastructure is crumbling, all kinds of something like, the government would be on it right away, and there would be people going to jail for such irresponsibility. But, you know, because this is the U.S., where the, you know, it's all about, you know, capitalist greed and you know, big business lobbying and everything, Norfolk Southern looks like they're going to get away with it. All I could say is I hope they go out of business. I hope they go bankrupt and cease to exist as a corporation, because, I mean, that's just how it is in America. Big business gets away with pretty much everything because they buy and pay the politicians to cover for them. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
And
well,
another thing too. Go ahead.
I was going to say there's been a lot of companies have moved operations to China because they think they're getting lax environmental standards, and maybe they were. At the same time, if there was this kind of disaster, I can imagine a disaster in China or in pretty much any part of the world, but I would think in China, if there was this kind of disaster, the people in charge would be very punished, perhaps even executed. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh yeah, they're very strict about this in China, because China knows that the whole world is watching China's rise and China's success, and therefore China needs to stay on top of any blunder that might happen. So yeah, they're very strict about it in China. In fact, just I think a little bit less than a year ago, there was a news story that it was like 60 some coal company executives were arrested for lying about their emission data. So, you know, they're very strict about it there. Not to mention, too, there's that one, company that used to produce, baby milk powder that was caught for, you know, cutting corners and it actually caused some poisoning. Well, that guy was arrested and put to death for harming all those babies. As you look at in the U.S., just look at all the big pharmaceuticals screwing over, you know, middle America, especially that region, you know, that Rust Belt region where East Palestine is, you know, with the, you know, Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, that region with the opioid crisis. And, you know, you had the Sackler family too, destroying, you know, those people. And look at him. He's running free today, still operating. So it just goes to show you, I mean, it's, you know, just capitalist greed and big business control of America. Yes, of course, it's, you know, the Jewish component to it also.
Well, okay, here's one thing. I mean, America really is falling apart before our eyes, and it's tragic to see it, but it's falling apart before our eyes. And honestly, when I was a kid, you heard about, what was the Cuyahoga River, which flows into Lake Erie in Cleveland. The river caught on fire, which is pretty bad. But a lot of things got better environmentally. Ralph Nader had a lot to do with it. He had a leading role in the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency. And a lot of things really did get better. But things are falling apart now. And, you know, you've had some giant oil spills. I guess you had, the Deep Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico about 20 years ago or so. You had the Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska. Was that maybe 25, 30 years ago? You've had some big catastrophes, but really things had, in general, things had gotten a lot better. And also, America had become kind of a model for environmental protection. I know that, that it was a model for Japan, and Ralph Nader was a model for Japan. And the very first political movements, non-governmental political movements in the Soviet Union were around saving Lake Baikal from pollution. And, you know, the world was paying a lot more attention to pollution. But the thing is, in the United States, things are falling apart. So systems that had been put in place just aren't functioning anymore. And America is increasingly not functioning correctly.
Well, it just goes to show, you know, just the double standard, you know, the double think, you know, one set of rules for the little guy and then a whole other set of rules for big business. You know, like, you know, these people who claim to be, you know, concerned about the climate and everything. Well, what is it? Oh, it's cow farts. It's gas stoves. It's overconsumption. It's people collecting too much rainwater in their backyard. Meanwhile, something like this, you know, the EPA says, it's perfectly safe to drink. There's no problems with it. It's perfectly safe to drink. And not only that, too, but the EPA was the one that gave the go order, allowing the company to burn all that toxic, you know, carcinogenic vinyl chloride into the air. I mean, how stupid. I mean, this is beyond reckless. It's a disaster. It's an absolute
disaster.
Disaster caused by the EPA.
All right. So, and the EPA, I don't know who's making decisions at the EPA. They have a young black man who is the director of it, who's obvious. Well, I guess he had been the EPA director equivalent for the state of North Carolina. And so he's a first. He's the first black EPA director. How much the EPA director had to do with this decision, I don't know. But if the EPA director is a affirmative action hire, who else at the EPA is affirmative action hire?
I heard somewhere that this guy got his fame by, you know, going after something called environmental racism, whatever that means.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that means white people are evil. That's what it means. It's really, there's two things. Okay. So
yeah,
one thing is, I don't know. I'm not going to go into it because we have a short program today because we're playing a long clip from a YouTuber that you follow. So we might as well just shift gears now. Would you like to introduce the clip we're about to play?
Captain Cool 07. It's a YouTube channel called Captain Cool 07. It's a young Chinese guy, you know, in his late 20s that lives in San Francisco, California. Well, he doesn't live in San Francisco. He lives on the outskirts. And, you know, he comments a lot about how bad San Francisco is, but, you know, he's, you know, very proud, second-generation Chinese youth, you know, very proud of his heritage, proud of his country. You know, he might not have the exact, you know, racial views that you know, myself and Dr. David Duke would have on race. But he's, you know, he is a very proud Chinese person, and, you know, I played several clips from him in the past. And here's another one where he talks about basically Taiwan and how its liberalism is destroying Taiwan.
Okay, let's roll that clip.
In my personal opinion, I strongly believe that President Vladimir Putin was absolutely correct when in 2019 he made a remark stating that liberalism has outlived its usefulness and is now obsolete. I strongly believe that liberalism is a philosophy which destroys entire countries, societies, and civilizations. And I am very against liberalism, and I do not believe any country or any society should adopt liberalism if it wishes to seek prosperity, stability, and greatness. Now, what is wrong with liberalism? Liberalism consists of a set of values which promises maximum individual freedom, that the wants of the individual should be placed above the needs of the collective. Liberal values include the freedom of the individual from almost all collective obligations, be it the collective obligation to the family, to religion, to the community, or to the country. Usually this will result in the lack of spirituality, unlimited sexual freedoms, including the changing of orientations and personal gender, resulting in the absence of family values, the abolishment of traditional values, the abolishment of the family structure, overconsumption and hedonism, among other things. And this will all bode very poorly for the entire society if it becomes the mainstream and dominant philosophy. Liberalism typically emerges and becomes popular when society reaches a certain point of prosperity. You study history of any human civilization, whether it's China or Russia or the Western world, right? Liberalism becomes popular among the youth when society reaches a certain point of prosperity, when at least one generation is no longer exposed to a great hardship or a great poverty. That is when the basic instinct of survival is no longer valued. Basic instincts of survival being collective teamwork through the community, through patriotism, through spirituality, through strong family values and traditional gender roles. These basic instincts of survival go out of fashion. These basic instincts of survival become uncool. These basic instincts of survival become rejected by the youth in pursuit of liberalism, which promises consumption, comfortable life, and hedonism. And as a result, when anything goes, everything goes. So in our Chinese-speaking world specifically, I believe Taiwan is an example of liberalism destroying the entire society. Taiwan is a prime example of how liberalism can destroy such a beautiful island, Taiwan, and destroy all of the beautiful Chinese characteristics which used to exist on the island. Recall that in 1949, the Chinese Nationalist Party, or the Kuomintang, retreated to Taiwan with 1 million Chinese people after the conclusion of the Chinese Civil War in the Chinese mainland. The Chinese Nationalist Party was not a liberal party during this time. The Chinese Nationalist Party governed Taiwan with a very disciplined, illiberal system. After 3 decades of hard work and construction, the Chinese people on Taiwan managed to build a very stable and prosperous society, which proudly represented the Chinese civilization and the Chinese soul to the entire world. From 1979 to the early 1990s, the standard of living in Taiwan was very high in Asia, especially following the completion of the 10 major infrastructure construction projects. Patriotism, that is the love for China, although under a different flag than the Chinese mainland, although under a different government from the Chinese mainland, was encouraged and instilled in every single person in Taiwan. Every single person in Taiwan was proud to be Chinese. Despite being a different administrative area than the Chinese mainland, people in Taiwan shared mainland China's pains and joys. They shared the mainland Chinese compatriots' pains and joys. Traditional values like family values, hard work, ethics, and spirituality were encouraged in Taiwan, and this resulted in a very profound and unique Chinese culture developing on the island of Taiwan. In fact, much of the Chinese culture in Taiwan at the time, like the movies, the popular culture, and the media, was so beautiful and so beautifully represented the Chinese soul and the Chinese civilization that mainland China today in the 21st century draws a lot of inspiration from it. Actually, today in the 21st century, mainland China encourages those old 1980s Taiwan singers and artists to come to the Chinese mainland to perform during the Spring Festival, during the CCTV performance, and so on. Because the Taiwanese representation of Chinese culture was just so profound and beautiful back in the 1980s. The Chinese culture from Taiwan in the 1980s was also so great that even Westerners admire it. Fei Yuqing, who was a famous Chinese singer from Taiwan during the 1980s, sang many beautiful songs, and his music is used for memes today by Westerners. So Taiwan really was a beautiful island, which represented the Chinese soul and the Chinese civilization in the 1980s. But Taiwan took the wrong path. Taiwan decided to take the path of liberalism. In the 1990s, there was a leader called Li Denghui. Li Denghui introduced liberal democracy and liberal concepts to the Taiwan youth and the Taiwan society. His efforts were followed by Chen Shui-bian from 2000 to 2008. What happened was that under the leadership of Li Denghui and Chen Shui-bian, the education system and the media, along with other sources of messaging in the society, were completely rewritten. Patriotism and the love for the Chinese identity was soon abolished and was no longer in style. on the college campuses and in the schools, the concept of Taiwan localization and de-Sinicization, that is to erase Chinese identities and values, were introduced. And many of the young people in Taiwan were manipulated to believe that they are no longer Chinese, but now we're Taiwanese this, and Taiwanese does not mean Chinese. Taiwan is a separate country. Taiwanese this and that. Liberalism and individual liberty has deemed it acceptable to promote all sorts of bizarre ideologies on the college campuses, among the youth, in the media, among the population. Bizarre ideologies like Taiwan should join Japan as a colony again. Bizarre ideologies like Taiwan should join the United States as a colony. Bizarre ideologies like there are 56 genders. Bizarre ideologies, including multi-gender education and all of these unacceptable concepts, which were once forbidden, are now being promoted by the liberals on Taiwan. And this has resulted in the complete social chaos and confusion of Taiwan. Now a lot of people in Taiwan can't even figure out if they're Chinese or Taiwanese. Now they cannot even figure out what country or what identity to identify with. Now they don't even know what they are. This is the result of liberalism. But not only that, it gets much worse. Liberalism evolves to something more sinister. When it reaches a certain peak, it evolves into something even worse called modernism, or rather postmodernism. In Taiwan today, in the United States of America today, in Canada today, in Germany today, in Western Europe today, it's not liberalism anymore. No, liberalism has reached such a high stage, it has evolved to something even more sinister, postmodernism. Postmodernism is this idea that the truth itself is relative to the individual. So you as an individual, I as an individual, can define the truth however I want it to be, regardless of what the objective reality is. So, for example, if I was born as a man with male body parts, but I feel that I'm a female, you have to call me by a certain pronoun, call me by a certain name, and you have to affirm and validate my personal reality. Otherwise, that's discrimination. That is what the modern is, and that is what the liberals want. And that's how they view the world. If I was born in China, if my ancestors are Chinese, if I practice the Chinese culture, but I don't want to be Chinese anymore, I can fabricate a brand new identity called Hong Konger or Taiwanese. And you have to call me a Hong Konger or Taiwanese and not Chinese, because that's my personal, individual, relative reality. And if you don't call me by that, I have the right to be angry with you. That is what the modernists and that is what the liberals want to promote. So ultimately, liberalism and the modernists believe in relative reality, the relative interpretation of reality, the relativity of morals, ethics, and norms. And this, my friends, will result in the atomization of the society and must be rejected completely. It must be rejected completely. Mainland China almost went down the liberal path also in the 1980s. In the 1980s, as you know, mainland China opened up to the rest of the world through the reform and opening up program. And mainland China entered this liberal wave. A lot of young people on the college campuses and even young Communist Party members and even Communist Party members at the highest levels became infatuated with liberalism. They became very obsessed with liberalism. Even the General Secretary of China back then in the 1980s, like Hu Yaobang and Zhao Ziyang, they were both liberals. They were from the liberal faction. And they came into conflict with the more conservative faction in the Communist Party. So all of these tensions eventually boiled over into the June 4, 1989 incident. China mainland was very lucky that in June 4, 1989, during that entire incident, there were still some old revolutionaries left in the party, like Deng Xiaoping. And at the crisis point, Deng Xiaoping did not hesitate. The army did not hesitate.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
I say all or nothing for Ukraine. I'm Peter Serafin with this week's Liberty Minute, brought to you by Right to Bear Insurance. If you own a firearm, you need to use code LIGHTHOUSE at protectwithbear.com just in case you ever need to use your firearm. The war in Ukraine started 1 year and 2 days ago. Let's reflect a little. The U.S. wasn't going to send tanks because that would cause World War III. Now we are sending tanks, but they're not going to get there for over a year. So the U.S. federal government intends to send money and other support for at least another year. Over $113 billion U.S. dollars have already been sent to the Ukraine. That's over $900 per taxpayer. How much of that money and how many lives have been lost because of our gradual support? We should have either been all in with everything that Ukraine needs from day one, or we should have stayed out entirely. Russia is famous for winning wars of attrition. Thousands or millions more will die. Western support needs to be aimed at winning or just give up. All or nothing. Either way, it will be cheaper financially and cost far fewer lives. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until next time, see this Pashem Parabellum.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
There were still some old revolutionaries left in the party, like Deng Xiaoping. And at the crisis point, Deng Xiaoping did not hesitate. The army did not hesitate. And the Central Committee did not hesitate to purge the liberals by fire, if you know what I mean. They purged the liberals and kicked them out of the country by fire. And it's because of this that China managed to save the country, save itself, and survive to achieve what it has achieved to this day. Because China rejects liberalism. The truth in China is defined as the objective truth. Socialism with Chinese characteristics is based on Deng Xiaoping's principle of seeking truth from facts, and the practice is only the greatest criterion of testing the truth. So what does this mean? Seek truth from facts. Practice is the only criterion of testing the truth. That means that when you govern a country, when you do something, you have to use science and experience and use your observations to determine what the truth is. That is called objective reality. And you use that to aid you in whatever you're doing, whether you're governing the country, whether you're doing a certain assignment, or whether you're doing this or that. You have to use the objective truth to guide yourself, not relative truth. I believe I'm a female, therefore I'm a female. That is not an argument in China, right? It's, I was born with this body part. That makes me a man. I'm a man. I was born in China. My ancestors are Chinese. I'm a Chinese person, right? That's the objective truth. That's the objective material reality. Seeking truth from facts is not a communist concept. This is a Chinese cultural concept. Deng Xiaoping did not make this up. The Communist Party of China did not make up seeking truth from facts. Seeking truth from facts actually is a Han Dynasty concept from the Book of Han. And that forms the core of the Chinese cultural mindset, right? Seeking truth from facts is the Chinese cultural mindset. It is not a communist concept. It is a Chinese concept. Russians also believe in the objective truth. Russians believe in the objective truth because Alexander Nevsky once said that God is in truth. Power is in truth. Sila of Pravda. Now, what did he mean by God is in truth? Well, God in religion, of course, is the most powerful entity in the universe, right? Alexander Nevsky meant that the most powerful force is behind the truth. That was what he meant. And look at Russia and Ukraine today right now. Why do Russian soldiers say that they're defending the truth? Why do Russian soldiers wear a V on their uniform, which says Seal of Pravda? How come? Because Ukraine is part of Russia, and they're fighting to unite Ukraine with Russia. That is why. Ukraine is part of Russia. That's the objective truth. Ukraine was where the Russian civilization emerged from 2,000 years ago, the Kievan Rus, right? That was where Russian civilization emerged from. Ukrainians and Russians are the same people. They're one family. They're one culture. They're the same. They are really the same thing, okay? But recently, over the last 100 years or so, some Ukrainian nationalists wanted to do a relative interpretation of the truth. They personally interpreted the truth as, we're Ukrainian, we're not Russian. We're this new identity, and we're going to go to the West and become Westerners. Of course, Russians had to bring them back into the fold, right? Of course, Russians had to go in there and bring them back into the Russian world, because this is just separatism. This is unacceptable. This is completely unacceptable. So philosophically, was the special military operation justified? Yes, I say that the special military operation was 100% justified. 100% it was justified. Westerners cannot understand this. Americans cannot understand this because Americans believe in the liberal concepts. They believe in the relative interpretation of truth and the individual interpretation of the truth. And they say that, well, I want to be Ukrainian. Why can't Ukrainian just be Ukrainian? Because objectively, it's a false construct. That's why. Why can't Taiwan just be Taiwan? Why can't Taiwanese people not be Chinese? Because objectively, that is not the reality. That's why. Why can't Hong Kongers be an independent country and Hong Kongers not be Chinese anymore? Because objectively, Hong Kong is Chinese. That's why. Americans are liberals. Since the founding of the United States of America is a liberal country and has been a liberal country. Americans are not taught to interpret the truth objectively, but rather relatively and subjectively based on individual feelings. That is why you cannot talk to an American about these concepts. That is why Americans will never understand objectivism versus relativism. They just cannot connect. The only reason why I can connect it is because I was born in a Chinese household in the United States, and my Chinese upbringing led me to this, okay? Chinese people can understand the feelings of the Russians. Why? Because Chinese people, we can look at the entire Ukrainian conflict in an analogy. Ukraine was where Russian civilization emerged from. They have a connection, okay? Well, if we look at China and use China as an analogy, in 1991, if China had collapsed and if the central plains of China, where the Yellow River is, became an independent state, do you believe that China should have the right to retake the central plains? Of course China should have the right to retake and unite with the central plains, because the central plains is where the Chinese civilization emerged from. That's where the Yellow Emperor and the Yellow River and the Autumn and Spring periods and all the histories of the Chinese dynasties took part in, right? Of course, the central plains is the soul of China. Ukraine is the soul of Russia. It's the same country. It's the same people. It's the same civilization. It's the same world. This is our objective truth. This is the objective truth. Сила в правде, right? Power is in truth. My friends, power is in truth. My friends, the next war is not going to be a war against communism versus capitalism, between communism versus fascism, communism versus capitalism. It's not going to be like that. That's not the next war. The war of ideology is over. We live in a post-ideological world. No, my friends. The next war is going to be a war between civilizations.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite, a seven-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Communism versus capitalism. It's not going to be like that. That's not the next war. The war of ideologies is over. We live in a post-ideological world. No, my friends. The next war is going to be a war between civilizations. Civilizations which adhere to liberalism, which adheres to this concept that the truth is relative, led by the United States of America and its allies, versus countries which interpret the truth objectively, led by Russia, China, and their allies, okay? So it's going to be a clash of truths. It's going to be a clash of objective versus relative truth. It's going to be a clash of liberal versus illiberal civilizations. And my friends, this is where the battle of philosophies, whether objective or relativism, is the real truth, will take place and will be determined, my friends.
Okay, so he's talking a lot about liberalism. And liberalism, this is a word that actually means different things to different people. To most people, to most people in America today, liberalism is the ism of liberals. And liberals are people in the Democratic Party who increasingly are buying into a lot of weird ideas. More historically, liberalism, you know, you could trace it back to John Locke. You could trace it back to John Stuart Mills, you know, so going back into this 1700s to 1800s, kind of a philosophy of individual freedom, of the people, you know, popular sovereignty. So the people have a right to rule themselves. And John Stuart Mill, I mean, he was big in British politics at the time of the American Civil War, and he was pushing for the right not just of universal male suffrage but universal female suffrage as well. And you know, so these might have been lofty ideas, individual freedom, and you know, the what one man, one vote, and all of this. You know, but now we have to assess it, and where has it led us, and why has it led us here? So, what do you think? I mean, give us your reaction to this gentleman's ideas.
Well, I mean, he's certainly right on a lot of things. I mean, especially talking about how liberalism, what it does is it promotes the absolute individual, you know, absolute freedoms of the individual against the will of the collective, against the will of the majority, is what it does. You know, of course, then what we have today is a form, you know, it's militant liberalism, where, you know, this, you know, liberal ideology is to be militarily imposed on nations, you know, that refuse to accept it by the United States, through the U.S. military. Essentially what liberalism is breaking down, you know, organic group collectives. It's you know, liberating the individual from his responsibility to, let's say, his family, you know, his community, his people, you know, in the organic sense. I'm not talking about, you know, an abstract, you know, liberal democracy sense. And the thing with liberalism too is, I mean, liberalism is a fluid ideology. It's an ideology that means different things to different people. You know, even Captain Cool said in the video, you know, this whole postmodernism where, you know, the truth is relative to how the individual feels. I mean, it's all about the individual's feelings and emotions, and, you know, your truth can be different from mine, and there is no absolute. The only absolute is there is no absolute. And that's what liberalism is. It relativizes everything. I would say liberalism is, you know, it started, you know, technically speaking in the, you know, Enlightenment era in the, you know, 1700s, and, you know, it's progressed into, it's basically a disease that's progressed into what it is today. Course, liberalism, the other thing too. Mm-hmm. Yes?
No, we just missed, yes? Like, a few syllables there. I think it's okay. So go ahead and continue.
Well, liberalism degrades. What was I saying here? Liberalism is also the, you know, it is the ideology that promotes, you know, radical egalitarianism too, as it tries to, you know, break free, you know, groups and castes and classes and all that, and tries to, you know, make everyone equal. That's the whole thing about a one man, one vote. You know, we're all equal kind of thing. So liberalism promotes egalitarianism, and we've seen where that has led us. Because I mean, there's no such thing as, you know, quote unquote equality where everybody is, you know. Because and here's the thing too. I mean, it's like, who benefits? You know, there's that saying, who benefits from this liberal system? Well, the wealthy and it's the wealthy elite and the powerful, the vast majority of whom are Jewish. You know, they're the ones that benefit from this liberal ideology, because they're able to manipulate, you know, politicians and puppets from behind, you know, people in government behind the scene.
And they're also able to manipulate the masses, right? The voters.
Yes.
So, I mean, honestly, most, we have one man, one vote, one adult, one vote in America, one adult, one vote. And honestly, most adults, have little idea how the government functions. They have little idea of what's really going on in society. And yet, you know, the bulk of them actually go out and vote. And, you know, even very intelligent people, often have no idea what they're really voting for. So, you know, like on the one hand, the idea of popular sovereignty, the idea that the government is for the people, by the people, of the people, whatever Abraham Lincoln said, that has an appeal to it. But in a, you know, a practical view, how is it working out for us? And maybe it was working. Maybe this liberal American political system was working reasonably well for a while, but now it's just collapsing. One other thing, you mentioned that America imposes it on other countries, and it does. I mean, America invades countries and then like holds elections. Maybe they're not the best elections. Maybe they're kind of fake elections. But like, for instance, when people are talking about Viktor Yanukovych, he was overthrown. He was the president of Ukraine and he was overthrown. And it's very common even to hear, supporters of Yanukovych or supporters of Russia, point out that Viktor Yanukovych was democratically elected. And he was democratically elected. But the fact that we feel that we have to say he was democratically elected in order to legitimize him and thus delegitimize the coup. I mean, I guess Kim Jong-un is not democratically elected. Does that mean it's okay to go overthrow Kim Jong-un? Right? And according to liberal democracy standards, the standards of liberalism, Xi Jinping is not democratically elected. The Chinese government is not democratically elected. In fact, it's one of the few countries that doesn't at least inform, embrace liberalism as a form of government. And, it's seems to be doing pretty well for its people. So how do we square that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like clearly China's system, Chinese traditional national values is totally incompatible with liberalism. Or rather, I should say it this way, liberalism is totally incompatible with Chinese traditional national about, you know, a collective force, you know, a kind of a united Chinese spirit, you could say. You know, ever since the dynasties, you know, with the emperors all the way to the modern day, you know, Communist Party of China, you know, which obviously is not communist ideologically, but is communist in name only. So that's the thing. And you know, Chinese people, I mean, they don't care about, you know, liberal democracy, you know, oh, I get a choice, I get the right to vote. They don't care about that. All Chinese people want, Chinese people are the most pragmatic, practical people on earth, down-to-earth people on earth. All they want is, you know, a stable livelihood and prosperity. And when I say prosperity, I don't mean like, you know, living in big mansions and driving fancy cars, even though a lot of Chinese people can afford that. What I mean by prosperity is a stable, you know, middle class, you know, lifestyle and enough to support their family, including their elderly and their children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Chinese people desire. So, yeah, I mean, the hell with, you know, oh, yeah, I can choose. I mean, yeah, how's it working out in Taiwan? This whole, you know, liberal democracy. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can technically vote in Taiwan. How's it working out in Taiwan?
I mean, like, I don't know. I would say that, well, okay, so what's the guy who made the YouTube video, what's his name?
His channel is Captain Cool 07. And yeah, I guess Captain he goes Cool. By Captain
Cool. Yeah. Okay, Captain Cool. So Captain Cool, he certainly had bad things to say about Lee Tonghui, right?
Mm-hmm.
The president of
the
Republic of China, in other words.
The one from the late
1980s. The one who succeeded Chang Jingguo.
Chang Jingguo, yeah, exactly.
So Chang Jingguo was Chiang Kai-shek's son. I think between Chiang Kai-shek and Chang Jingguo, there was for a few years kind of a placeholder president. But basically, you had Chiang Kai-shek, who was the who took over the Republic of China when it was still based in the mainland, took it over, you know, following the death of Sun Yat-sen, And he fought a civil war against Mao Zedong, which lasted a couple of decades, and that he ultimately lost, and then moved his government to Taipei. And he was a nationalist, and he wasn't a liberal either. Right? The Nationalist Party, its roots are not in liberalism. Nationalism and liberalism really don't have the same roots.
Ideological opposites.
Right. And so Lee Teng-hui, how much do I know about internal Taiwanese politics? I don't know. The thing is, Lee Teng-hui had inherited kind of a bit of a difficult situation, because this difficult situation. I'm not saying his way of dealing with it was the best. But you had a government in Taipei that was the government of the Republic of China. And the end of 1948, the Congress, or the National Assembly of China, most of them fled to Taipei with Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists, late 48 or early 49. And they continued to meet in Taipei for decades. There was a national assembly. And so there were assemblymen who represented Beijing and Shanghai and Wuhan and everywhere else. Lanzhou, you had people who represented all these places. But the thing is, over the decades, gradually they were getting older and they would die. They couldn't hold elections in Wuhan or Shanghai. They couldn't hold elections. So whoever was in office in 1949 was just frozen there, but then they died. Well, when they died, then the second place finisher would come and take his place. But by the 1980s, you were just having, there was nobody to represent these areas. So you were getting to a point where you were like having a, like, real lack of legitimacy, because you had an elected government, but the office holders were dead, and you couldn't elect new ones.
It was because at the time, when the communists first took over the mainland, and then even a few decades after the government in Taiwan, the Republic of China, at the time they were thinking, one day we would maybe be able to retake the mainland and push out the communists. Because at the time, China, Mao's regime was in no way, shape, or form.
It was a plausible idea for a while.
Yeah, but I think what happened was after Mao died, and when did Jimmy Carter recognize the People's Republic of China as opposed to the Republic of China as the one?
It was 1978, which would be after Mao died.
So after Deng Xiaoping, during, when Deng Xiaoping started, that's when Jimmy Carter, switched, because, the UN had already recognized the People's Republic of China over the Republic of China in 71.
Yeah, 71, yeah.
But the United States still recognized the Republic of China in Taiwan as the one China. So I think after the United States flipped recognition, pretty much, the Republic of China was at the time, I'm sure the people didn't think it was hopeless. Obviously, because Jimmy Carter, his style was more, you could say he was more of a dove compared to Reagan the hawk. I don't know if that's a good analogy, but his thing was, to kind of, give way, more is, what I would hear, conservatives, particularly, right-wingers here say that about Jimmy Carter.
Right, the 1980 presidential election between Reagan and Carter, Reagan was criticizing Carter as being soft, and Reagan was criticizing Carter from a hawkish position. In Reagan's second term, Reagan himself had a pretty major change of heart about foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Did it become more...
He reached out. He realized that nuclear war is something that could happen much more easily than it could happen, in fact, accidentally. which scared him, and he wanted to reach out to the Soviet Union, which by then was led by a reasonable person of the name of Mikhail Gorbachev, and he wanted to reach out to try to forge institutions and systems to prevent accidental nuclear war from happening, or nuclear war in general. And At the time, I never gave Reagan credit for it. I gave all the credit to Mikhail Gorbachev, but in retrospect, it really does take two to tango. And Reagan was the one in the administration who wanted to tango. And to the extent he did, to the extent there was any tangoing, and there were treaties that came out of it. That was Reagan's initiative. It wasn't his aide.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
And to the extent he did, to the extent there was any tangoing, and there were treaties that came out of it. That was Reagan's initiative. It wasn't his aides. Whatever he got done in face of opposition from his administration.
Although there were so many things wrong about Reagan that won't get it. Reagan is not the this idol that the conservatives like to make him out to be. These you know, normicons, you know, so, oh, Reagan, no, there were a lot of things bad about Reagan, you know, including starting gun control, amnesty for illegals, Rex 84. I'm not going to get into it, but just a few. Essentially, Rex 84 was militarizing the police, you know, police officers in local areas, amongst many other things. But yeah, so that's the thing. But you know, when the United States recognized the People's Republic of China as the, you know, official China, it was over for Taiwan at that point. But the thing is now that China, you know, the People's Republic of China, you know, went a totally different direction, you know, the opposite of the way the neoliberals thought that they would go. Now, you know, these war hawks, these you know, U.S. establishment, you know, types are freaking out, and now they're suddenly, you know, wanting to say, okay, well, what about, you know, maybe we should support Taiwan independence because China's getting a little too strong, you know, and challenging our hegemony.
Well, here's the thing. So Captain Cool probably knows more about Taiwanese internal politics than I do, but Lee Tong-hui, you know, whether he was opening the door for Taiwanese independence or what, you know, that can be debated, but certainly economic relations in general between Taiwan and the mainland improved greatly. I guess they were already improving under Chiang Ching-kuo, but they continued to improve. There was massive investment in China during the administration of Lee Tong-hui, and it's, you know, Lee Tong-hui was a Kuomintang, a nationalist party leader, and it's not the nationalist party that's been pushing for independence. We'll see.
Yeah, it's the liberal leftist, you know, American establishment-backed DPP, you know, Democratic Progressive Party. I think his criticisms of Lee Teng-hui was that he kind of opened the doors for this kind of infectious liberal disease to come into Taiwan. I think that's what he was, whether Lee Teng-hui knew it at the time or not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you did get the, like, one person, one vote, and you got a government that was representative of people geographically in Taiwan without, you know, it's technically the Republic of China, and yet all the representation is coming from Taiwan, which maybe you could say that opens the door, that becomes a, what is it when you got two things that are at odds with each other?
Clearly, it's the United States that's the one behind it. It's the United States that's taking advantage of Taiwan's democratic process.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of forces within the United States. But, you know, we are really coming up at the end of the show, so we're going to have to wrap this up. We'll have more to talk about next week, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, that went fast. Well, I guess the video took up a bulk of the time, but still, that was pretty fast. But, well, hope this week goes well for all of you. And I'll talk to you all next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Chinatown, where the lights are low, hearts that know no other lands, drifting to and fro. Dreamy, dreamy Chinatown, always light so bright.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. cows, too.
Ease Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you